evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Simpoga in Washington. Today is Saturday, March 4th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. Six opposition-led Nigerian states withdrew a Supreme Court petition to invalidate the result of last weekend's presidential vote, which they had argued violated electoral rules.
We noticed that the court case was instituted very early in the morning, and then by evening, we got this breaking news that they are discontinuing that case.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights urges Sudanese authorities to reform the country's judicial system, to rein in its aggressive security forces, and to do more to create a better, more democratic society.
The memories of Sudan's 30-year dictatorship are still fresh in its people's minds. They are determined not to return to the past. Transitions are never straightforward, but they provide enormous opportunities for progress in all areas of economic, social, cultural, civil and political life.
And Malawi's High Court has sentenced a former information minister and a subordinate to 6 years in prison for stealing computers and generators meant for a state-owned news agency.
Senior people in the Tosa government are resigning, and when they are resigning, they are mentioning that there is gross corruption in the Tosa government. Now, what is ironical is that there isn't anyone who has been arrested.
Those and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Six opposition-led Nigerian states on Friday night withdrew a Supreme Court petition to invalidate the result of last weekend's presidential vote, which they had argued violated electoral rules. The states, led by governors in the main opposition party that came second in last weekend's election, had accused Nigeria's Electoral Commission of failing to follow its own rules and election laws in conducting the vote and announcing a winner, according to court documents. Earlier, I talked to VOA's Abuja Bureau Coordinator, Medina Dauda. Medina, what do we know about this rapid change of heart by the six states?
This also came to us as a surprise because we noticed that the court case was instituted very early in the morning, and then by evening, we got this breaking news that they are discontinuing that case. So I was trying to do due diligence by trying to find out from those concerned. I went out to call the senior advocate of Nigeria, Mike Ozekome, who happens to be their lawyer, and he confirmed to me that, yes, these six states, Adamawa, Akwa Ibom, Bayelsa, Delta, Edo, and Sokoto states, are asking him to discontinue this case. And I said to him, does it mean they are totally discontinuing or they are preparing to file another case somewhere, somehow, sometime? He simply said to me, when something is discontinued, that is the end of it. So that was exactly what happened between yesterday and today.
And there was no reason given for the change of heart, was there?
At all. He didn't give me any reason. I was trying to ask him more. That was why I said, is it something that is going to come up again in the nearest future? He said his statement and his signature was that the case is discontinued. And when anything is discontinued, it means it is no more. But I've been trying my best to see if I can get some other reactions from maybe the camp of the elected president. I wanted to find out from the camp of the elected president if the olive branch that he extended to them is being accepted, because I found out that he's been calling on all the opposition to come and put hands on deck to help rule the country and bring it back to its former glory. I don't know if that decision had to do with this contact by the camp of the elected president.
So in that case, it means it's only Mr. Obi's and Mr. Baka's camp that may still challenge the election results. Is that correct?
Well, yes. Mr. Obi's camp and, of course, the presidential candidate of the People's Democratic Party, Alhaji Atiku Abubakar, told us that he is going to court. And again, it might interest you, Douglas, to know that the appeal court has given Mr. Atiku Abubakar and Mr. Peter Obi the permission to supervise all the election materials that were used for the presidential elections.
Thanks, Madina. VOA's Abuja Bureau Coordinator, Madina Dauda, spoke to me earlier from Abuja. Nigeria has just concluded what many analysts refer to as one of Africa's most important elections of the year. The ruling party candidate, Bola Ahmed Tinubu, former Lagos governor, clinched victory from a crowded field of aspirants, winning 37% of the vote. One of the most popular candidates of this election season was Labour Party's Peter Obi, a former governor of Anambra State. Obi had massive support among the youth and was viewed as the candidate to upend the status quo of Nigeria's political establishment. Mr. Obi came in third with only 6 million votes, but rejected the results of the elections, claiming that irregularities had stolen victory from him. However, with the historic low voter turnout, there is no doubt that voter apathy played a role in his loss. Reports say that fewer than 3 out of 10 people who registered cast their ballots. Evelyn Dan Epele is a Nigerian political analyst and reporter. She covered the elections and visited many parts of the country during the campaign period. She tells VOA's Jackson Mvunganyi that the government fraud process to replace the old currency, the first time in nearly 20 years, could have contributed to low voter turnout.
Thank you so much, Jackson. There's been a number of factors that, you know, we can say that caused the low voter turnout in the 2023 general election. But one that really comes to the mind of everyone pretty much is the new Naira cashless policy that was introduced somewhere along the line of this election, like when we were having the build up to the election. And this was a policy that came pretty much out of nowhere. It was very much unexpected. You know, when we have a central bank governor who at the start of the road to 2023, the election pathway, he actually showed or indicated interest in running for office of the president under the ruling APC party. And so, although that did not materialize, the CBN governor went on to introduce this. The CBN went on to introduce this cashless policy that sort of brought up a number of debates about even, you know, the credibility of the policy coming from the CBN that's being led by a governor who indicated interest in running in this presidential election. Mm. And so that spiraled into something that became some sort of confusion for a lot of people. And so we were left with, on election day, Nigerians who were pretty much mentally exhausted. And I'd say mentally because there was a lot of debates leading up to the election about this cashless policy. This is a country where 90% of our spending is cash, and cash is king. And this policy was introduced. And, you know, because of that compromise that comes from, you know, the CBN participating in the CBN governor participating in partisan politics, that also caused a situation where people did not even trust the level of information that they were getting anymore. And so the debate became about whether or not this was actually a cashless policy or it was just a stunt that was pulled to sort of shrink the ability of Nigerians to even spend and even go out on election day.
I don't understand how, you know, a policy about money, a monetary policy or a fiscal policy affected electoral policy or elections.
He did, because when you take money away from Nigerians, you've pretty much taken away their life. Nigeria is a country that has a very high poverty rate. And I'm sure that that's something everyone knows, that this country have a lot of people that are struggling on a daily basis to even feed and afford basic amenities. And so when this cashless policy happened, and it's been happening for weeks before the election actually happened. And there are a few things that happened that made people understand that it wasn't that the CBN didn't print enough cash that could go around, but that this cash was even being deliberately hoarded, and it wasn't able to get to Nigerians. And so people felt trapped. For example, Jackson, as you speak to me right now, I don't have a single naira in my purse, and it's been like that for weeks. And what that means is that until I get home, for example, I can't even drink water. I can't stop on the roadside and get a bottle of water, because typically we do a lot of our expenses in cash. Cash is king in Nigeria. And so because this happened, it crippled people on so many fronts. When people could not pay for things, people could not buy food, people could not even pay transportation to work. That's why I called it a mental exhaustion. So it wasn't a direct correlation, but then it resulted in things that led people to feeling mentally exhausted. And so even on election day, people were concerned about whether or not they could even leave their houses in the first place, because they had no cash. It's such a hassle even making e-banking and paying for things with bank transfers. The network is terrible. Some people make payments and the payments do not reflect in the receiver's accounts. It was just a lot of things. And so for some people, it was a matter of, you know what, I'm not even going to stress myself. I'm just going to sit at home. And already a lot of people feel in this country that their votes do not count. So there was that already. And so all that momentum, especially among young people that we had leading up to the election, just waned completely under the face of this cash trap that we all found ourselves in.
That was Evelyn Danye-Pele, Nigerian political analyst and reporter. She spoke with my colleague, Jackson Mvunganyi.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
French President Emmanuel Macron arrived in Brazzaville on Friday for a visit of a few hours. After meeting with Congolese President Denis Sassou Nguesso, the French president met with the French living in Congo, a community of about 4,300 nationals. Brazzaville, the Congolese capital, was the fourth stop on Macron's visit to Central Africa. After a few hours of one-on-one talks with Denis Sassou Nguesso, two partnership agreements were signed between the two parties. His brief stay of only a few hours had mixed reactions, however, from the people, as recorded by reporter Rosie Poitz in Brazzaville. Gavet Elongo is in charge of an opposition political party. He feels that this visit sent a message contrary to the values defended by France.
La France et le président Macron défendent les valeurs de liberté, les valeurs de démocratie. Mais toutes ces valeurs n'existent quasiment pas au Congo.
France and President Macron defend the values of freedom and democracy. But all these values do not exist in Congo because the government in Brazzaville is considered an authoritarian regime. But our expectations are mainly about political prisoners, including Makako and Okombi, that Macron asks his counterpart during the meeting to release them. Frank Charlin Albin Chibinda is a human rights defender.
La situation des droits humains au Congo.
The human rights situation in the Congo is of no interest to anyone in the Congo. Chadin says we have issues of democracy and governance of public affairs that are of great interest to us. We would really have liked President Macron to give us the opportunity to speak with him so that we could tell him directly about the situation and that the Congolese are experiencing. Maxence Blachedu Ondoga leads a youth NGO. The latter believes that the arrival of Macron is historic because Brazzaville and Paris share a strong historical link.
Brazzaville est quand même une ville historique pour la France.
Odongo says President Macron is not the first French president to come to the Congo, and this visit is also a way for France to revive its relationship with Congo. Two conventions in favor of environmental protection and good governance of natural resources, as well as a contract for technical assistance to investments, were signed on the sidelines of this meeting. VOA.
Stay engaged with VOA Africa. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, comments, or greetings. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk, is urging Sudanese authorities to reform the country's judicial system, to rein in its aggressive security forces, and to do more to create a better, more democratic society. The High Commissioner presented an update on the human rights situation in Sudan to UN Human Rights Council on Friday. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In his remarks to the United Nations Human Rights Council, UN Rights Chief Volker Turk appeared personally invested in the country's evolution toward a society based on the rule of law. He noted that Sudan was the first country he visited as High Commissioner. What he saw, he said, was a country at a critical juncture, a country emerging from decades of conflict and repression, inhabited by people expecting meaningful change, peace, democracy, and justice.
The memories of Sudan's 30-year dictatorship are still fresh in its people's minds. They are determined not to return to the past. Transitions are never straightforward. But they provide enormous opportunities for progress in all areas of economic, social, cultural, civil, and political life.
In his speech Friday, the High Commissioner criticized the excessive use of force against protesters taking part in demonstrations. While the toll has dropped in recent months, he noted that killings and injuries of protesters continued. He urged the authorities to instruct the security forces to respect human rights and refrain from using live ammunition. Turk said impunity remains a serious issue. He called on the authorities to investigate human rights violations and abuses and said those found to be responsible must be held accountable. He said he was concerned by the pushback on the important gains made by women under the transitional government.
Women have been at the forefront of peaceful protests and civil society action, and I've met many of them during my visit. Yet they have increasingly borne the brunt of hate speech, intimidation, and harassment, both online and offline.
Sudan's military signed a framework political agreement in December to relaunch the country's transition to civilian rule. The Minister of Justice, Mohamed Saeed Al-Helou Dankas, told the council work was underway to hold free, fair, and internationally monitored general elections to complete the transitional process. He said human rights are a central part of the framework agreement, which provides for the protection of cultural, political, religious, and other rights and freedoms. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Members of Uganda's lesbian, gay, and transgender communities say they have been facing a backlash since Parliament ordered an investigation into alleged promotion of homosexuality in schools. The lawmaker leading the probe, Cuthbert Abigaba, said children were being introduced to same-sex relations through recruitment and reading materials in schools, but did not provide any evidence. LGBTQ activists say the community faces blackmail and extortion by law enforcers, eviction by landlords, and in one case, the threat of castration by a mob. Activists say the situation will likely get worse as Parliament is preparing a new law that would criminalize aiding, abetting, and promoting same-sex relations. A small organization in Juba is working to help those addicted to drugs and alcohol. James Shimanyola spoke with three men who helped found the organization.
Illegal drugs are readily available in South Sudan. The United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime says cocaine, cannabis, and heroin are smuggled through Uganda, Sudan, and Kenya. But the nine members of the group stopping drug taking in South Sudan are fighting against illegal drug use and addiction. They raise funds from local donors to rehabilitate drug users. Three of the members became hooked on drugs as teenagers. Now, Esiene Ade, Emmanuel Juma, and Richard Tongwilo have been sober for years and now are trying to show addicts they can free themselves of drugs. Juba University student Ade, aged 37, says his group operates without international donor support.
When you align yourself with these donor interests, it becomes very hard to achieve your vision. We know there are illegal drugs that enter the country legally.
The group, which works with local government medical officials, was established more than 4 years ago. It uses money from local donors to travel to all 10 regions of the country to raise awareness about the risk of drug abuse, aiming to prevent people from falling into addiction. Volunteers with the group counsel addicts and encourage them to seek treatment at local health centers. Ade talks about the days when he was hooked on drugs.
South Sudan is an environment where these substances are affordable and available. The first goal of the day is, where can I go and smoke my weed? Where am I going to drink? I had a problem with my family. It took me some time to rebuild that relationship after coming out of the drugs and also coming out publicly talking about them. It also affected my school because I had to drop out of school.
43-year-old Emmanuel Juma describes the damage addiction does.
Everyone is traumatized, so there is a lot of conflict disorder that is affecting some of these kids, and they think having drugs could really help them cope.
Richard Tongwilo, aged 45, also a student at Juba University, attests to the power of drugs.
Drug is something that you take it and always forcing you to do something wrong. It can control you and it can make you to take wrong decision. When you find a wrong friend always making you also to take something wrong. There is a good friend and there is a bad friend.
Medical experts say drug or alcohol addiction lead to problems functioning in daily life and multiple health issues, often leading to death. The United Nations on Drugs and Crime estimates more than 270 million people around the world use illegal drugs. For VOA News, I'm James Shimanyula in Nairobi, Kenya.
Malawi's High Court has sentenced a former information minister and a subordinate to 6 years in prison for stealing computers and generators meant for a state-owned news agency. The punishments come the same week a presidential advisor and a ruling party spokesman resigned over corruption in the current government. Analysts weigh in on the government's crackdown on corruption and whether it's being used to weed out rivals. Lameka Masina reports from Blantyre.
Former Information Minister Henry Musa and his Director of Information Gideon Muntari, both members of the Opposition Democratic Progressive Party, or DPP, were sentenced this week, more than 5 months after their conviction on corruption charges. They joined several officials of the previous government, jailed over various corruption-related cases, in a crackdown that the administration of President Lazarus Chakwera launched after winning the 2020 election. This includes the arrest last November of the country's vice president, Saulos Chilima, who allegedly took payments amounting to $280,000 and other items from British businessman Zuneth Sattar in return for Malawi government contracts. DPP spokesperson Shadrick Namalomba approached the crackdown, but says the problem is that the effort is marred with selective justice. He said most of the arrested are officials of the former ruling party rather than the current ruling Tonse Alliance.
Senior people in the Tonse government are resigning, and when they are resigning, they are mentioning that there is gross corruption in the Tonse government. Now, what is ironical is that there isn't anyone who has been arrested, anyone who is answering a case of corruption in court, and there is no one who has been imprisoned within the Tonse government.
Namalomba said a good example of selective justice in the fight against corruption is the 6 years custodial sentence given to Musa and Muntari, although they retained the property they stole.
We hear that the people now, the cash getters, they are being pardoned because they have retained the money. And this is laughable. While others, like in this case of Honorable Musa, we hear that he retained the money, but he has been jailed. While people also defrauded this country, and yet they are being forgiven. This is selective justice, and it must not be condoned.
Cash getters is the name given for people who defrauded the Malawi government of an estimated $30 million during the administration of former President Joyce Banda from 2012 to 2014. Banda's People's Party is among 9 parties that form the Tonse Alliance. Local media reported last week that 5 cashgate suspects recently dodged imprisonment after paying back the money they stole, while 3 others were negotiating with the government to reimburse the funds and be discharged. Attorney General Thabo Chakaka Nyirenda told a local daily this week that he believes that amnesty remains the most viable way to recover public assets from suspects convicted of defrauding the government. Political analyst George Piri says the problem is that the Malawi government is mixing the fight of corruption with politics.
Because if you look at all the people you've mentioned, they belong to the Democratic Progressive Party. But what about these cases that we have seen from the Tonse Alliance? And there are many other things within the country which the suspects are not taken to court.
VOA could not get immediate reaction from government authorities on the allegations of selective justice in dealing with corruption in Malawi. However, President Chakwera told Parliament Tuesday this week that delays in hearing corruption cases would end soon following the establishment of a special anti-corruption court. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi. VOA.
Stay engaged with VOA Africa. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, comments, or greetings. Dial the international code +1 then 202 258 3076. The number again is the international code +1 then 202 258 3076.
The special representative of the United Nations Secretary General and head of the United Nations Integrated Transitional Mission in Sudan says he remains hopeful Sudan's military and civilian leaders will soon reach a political settlement to move beyond the current stalemate. Mike Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
UNITAM's chief, Volker Perthes, told reporters in Khartoum Thursday he remains hopeful that Sudanese leaders will reach a consensus and restore peace and stability in the country soon. Shortly after meeting with members of the Joint Higher Military Committee for Security Arrangements on the Darfur track, Perthes reiterated his commitment to supporting the Juba peace deal to stop the fighting in parts of Sudan to return to a civilian-led government. Perthes stressed the need for the urgent deployment of the Joint Protection Force in the Darfur region to provide protection to civilians as stipulated in the Juba Peace Agreement. And he commended the different political forces, including armed groups, that are signatories for their cooperation.
Sudan is promised to return to a transition civilian government once again through this political settlement among different Sudanese political actors. And we should not forget the importance of peace in the conflicting areas, particularly in Darfur and the two areas.
The Darfur track is one of the 5 tracks in the Juba Peace Agreement signed in October 2020 between the Sudanese Transitional Government of Military Leaders and an umbrella group of opposition groups known as the Sudanese Revolutionary Front. Under the agreement, the various forces are supposed to deploy a joint 12,000-strong force in Darfur within 90 days to secure the area and provide protection for civilians. About 2,000 forces graduated last year but have yet to be deployed. The UN chief vows to continue cooperating with Sudan's military leaders and build the capacity of the Joint Protection Force and train them to carry out their mandate in a professional manner.
We have achieved some development, including the establishment of sub-offices in all the states in Darfur. So we are looking forward to expanding more cooperation and more specifically training of the Joint Protection Forces on the human rights law.
Peretz says a stable political situation will help the mission seek more resources from the international community to support developmental projects and build community peace and reconciliation in Sudan.
Since the beginning of our existence, and according to our mandate from Security Council, we have been tasked to effectively build peace and to help the Sudanese parties to keep peace in their country.
Major General Abubakar Fagiri, chairman of the Joint Higher Military Committee for Security Arrangements of the Darfur Track, says his meeting with Peretz set a way forward in efforts to fully implement the security arrangements.
We have set a roadmap for more future cooperation to support the peace process in Darfur. We expect peace to prevail in the whole Darfur region after the deployment of the Joint Protection Force.
Last month, the signatories met in South Sudan and agreed to extend the time frame for implementing the peace deal by another 24 months. Intercommunal clashes have been rampant in Darfur since the fall of longtime President Omar al-Bashir. In April last year, authorities in Sudan's Darfur region said at least 200 people were killed and dozens of others wounded during renewed intercommunal clashes between Arab nomads and local farmers in Krenik locality of West Darfur state. Michael Atit for VOA News, Khartoum.
Second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from across the continent.
From Bamenda, Libyanga. I've been drinking more alcohol for the past 5 days. Did you check on me? Did you look for me? I walked in the room, eyes are red, and I don't smoke banga. Did you check on me? Did you check on me? Now did you notice me? Nobody we know the paranoia. Cause I put a smile on my face, a facade you can never face. And if you don't know me well, you won't see how buried I am inside my grave. Inside my grave.
Yeah, we can't hold it for you. Cause you see people. Nigga stay on guard cause the street is so cold. You know if you carry the weight I put on my shoulder. Girl, I said I'd be home by the weekend, I know. But I gotta stay on the grind and stack up my door. Many people wanna come try to waste time. They say the grass is greener on this side. My mama said the snakes are gonna still try. But that's okay, I got G's and they will ride. And yeah, you know, say overstopping on my sickness. But Benny, I'm just minding my business. That's why the earth and the sea is my witness. All the world gonna see my existence. They never thought a young nigga will get so far. Oh baby, I'm just minding my business. I swear the earth and the sea is my witness. But the world gon' feel my existence. They never thought a young nigga will get so far.
Why you say I did not if I do and if I do anything you want me to? last in me. I built you a masterpiece. This world not enough for me. Kiss me and choose you for me. Oh, close company. Energy feel no punch on me. Yeah. This luxury. RIP DJ somebody. Yeah. Oh, the mommy's on a ejo. T-shirt off white glove. Abu Dhabi food.
For me, two girls, not enough for me, three girls, not enough for me, not enough for me, not enough for me, four girls, not enough for me, five girls, not enough for me, six girls, not enough for me, not enough for me, nah, nah.
Pull up in a Tonka truck. You either get bust around or bust up. What's in the briefcase? The rents are dollars. Could be a cheap date. That's puck the bottles. Lames in the sack and I'm blaming the net. Let's do the money dance. One die for a fade. Keep it in the family. Cut my cousin. The pillows in the air. Myself is moisture. Nivea defense to block the solar. Pastor Mary Jane. This world my oyster. Yeah. Los Angeles. Give me more. More ambience. BBC One smoking. It's international motion. Let me do my dance. Let me cut my bands. I'm thinking of a master plan. Reprogram, reset. Stay focused, revenge. Until then, foot on neck.
Just trust in me. I built you a masterpiece. This world not enough for me. Kiss me and choose in my family. Company. Energy feel no punch on me. Yeah. This luxury, RIP DJ somebody. Yeah. Oh, the mommy's on a ejo. T-shirt off white look. Abu Dhabi food.
Don't show. I'm on my polo white, my face show. Sweet
boy for life, you don't know. You're serious, baby, worry my phone. You don't dress up for back, you don't know. Every day when you run, I'm on call. Supposed to know the thing go. Man, get united till I fade out. Give the vibe, no pure on my way out. Pull a bad, anytime we stay past. The men, them outside, we know they ask. No, they look for us, we know they ask. Though they see the mula, we don't spray out. Thank God, said him, not pay out. Okay, see, I'm ahead of them, I she want you. I'm a baller, you got on me. No man fit talk to me, he knew me, he go collect you. See, I'm on a me, they lead, I she want you. I'm a baller, you got on me. No man fit talk to me, he knew me, he go collect you. I'm on a different stage. Singlet belt and ripped up jeans. Man to wise, I know if you lose that cheese. Oluwa thunder my body with blessings. When you leave that team. When I say kukuru cook that team. Who they check amoya, look that team. Face white, black, I rebuke that team. But nobody try stress me, I know be JJC. I don't know if you get it on a top rating. Affiliate with the best team. You won't race me, we know they do the same thing. Can I no be just key, I'ma you stay waiting, no go easy me less. I'ma you put your creeping, I do it diligently. Won't let me hurry back me. Man, get in high till I fade out. Give the vibe, no pure on my way out. Pull a ball, anytime we stay about. The men, them outside, we no day out. No they look for us, we no day out. Though they see the mula, we don't spray out. Thank God, say the not pay out. Okay, get in high till I fade out. Give the vibe no pure on my way out. Pull a ball, anytime we stay about. The men them outside, we no day out. No they look for us, we no day out. Though they see the mula, we don't spray out. Thank God, said the man don't pay out. Okay,
I'm not afraid to Man, them never study party. I've been giving them the beef, them bopping. I've been giving them the titty cart. Oh, yeah, yeah. And I wanna live life la vida loca. I think better when I'm not sober. And when I step in out the scene, it's over. Yeah, and I just wanna be somebody. Somebody will be somebody. Somebody will like somebody. Somebody will burn somebody. Yeah, and I just want to party. To party sipping Bacardi. With friends and family. Yeah, and songs and melody. Yeah, and I wanna be somebody. Trying to make a living in a funny. And I be calculating for the right timing. And opinions, if they fly them, they yab me. Yab me, and yeah, good them I call me. Boy, I'ma stay shining. And I just want all the flex. Me and my girls, chilling in a drop top, cruising. Cause I be somebody, somebody with me. Somebody, whoa, yeah, somebody with like somebody. Somebody with on somebody. Yeah, and I just want to party. To party, sipping Bacardi.
That was our Saturday Music Spot. Hope you enjoyed the music. Netherlands Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. From the rest of the Netherlands Africa team, I thank you for joining us tonight and join us tomorrow Sunday. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you a very wonderful evening.